Joe, you are all classically trained musicians, but how would you describe the style of the music you play?
Well, for us, it's just a natural response to becoming trained in the classical tradition and then responding in some way to all the music that's around us. And I grew up playing in rock bands, so for me, trying to combine everything from Bach to the Beatles to heavy metal all in one is just a natural amalgam, something that is a striving for the proper tenor of our times.
Why do you think that there is such a divide between classical music and popular music in this country?
I think a lot has to do with marketing. You guys should just chime in here, okay?
Okay.
Yeah. It has to do with our educational system, possibly. It also has to do with the music that is a natural product of our culture. And our culture really is a mixture of the confluence of Africa and Europe, and it has been for hundreds of years. And these two great traditions have been mixing together, banging into each other, informing each other, and producing all this amazing music. So,
you know, when I listened to the tune that you just played, I did think a little bit of Kurt Weill.
Uh-huh.
Does that...
Sure.
What do you think of that?
I think that's great.
Do you like Kurt Weill?
Yeah, I think Kurt Weill was a really interesting composer. I haven't heard that comparison before, but it makes a lot of sense when you say it.
Joe, how did classical music develop? And why do you think that development makes it the kind of music that it is today and a kind of music that maybe some people in our country don't relate to?
It comes from the European legacy, and it really grew up from the Catholic Church, and it comes from the church music, and it goes back about 1,000 years. Some of the underpinnings of classical music really stem from some of the ideals that had to do with what was considered to be the deepest spiritual expression of the Christian church in Europe. And that meant that you should be striving for the afterlife, that music shouldn't have to do with the body, it should have to do with the spirit. It had to do with music that was more transcendent. When music in Europe tended to get syncopated,
it made people think about sex.
It made people want to dance, and dance makes people want to have sex, and the church said, no, that's not good, because you should be thinking about what happens in the next life. And it caused composers to go off in this interesting trajectory. They were kind of stifled that way. There was a period called the Ars Nova in the 1400s when composers started getting very sophisticated with their syncopations, and the Pope let that go for about 25 years and put a stamp down on it. But it caused composers to go in a different direction, and they developed melody and harmony, and it's one of the great contributions. But the thing to remember about Europe is that rhythm was considered, and dance, even though they had it, of course, and people danced, it was considered somewhat superficial. It wasn't the deep music. Maybe you could say even obscene in a way.
Well, I guess when you say that a lot of the rhythm was stamped out of classical music, whenever you say something like that, my mind immediately goes to what might be the exceptions. Dun-dun-da-da-dun-da-da-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. The Bach concertos. I mean, there's some very rhythmic music in classical music.
Of course there is, and classical musicians and composers will be quick to say that. But it has to do with the use of rhythm as something that is a mainstay of it, a pursuit of syncopation, a driving use of drums, if you will. The way to get a handle on it is to look at Africa, the other great inspiration behind the music in this culture. And in Africa, the deepest spiritual aspect of the music has to do specifically with dancing and drumming, a ceremony in which the shaman would discorporate to go to the tree of the ancestors and bring back knowledge. And it was done through dancing and drumming, intense drumming. So you have in Europe this idea that rhythm is something that is somewhat superficial. In Africa, you have this idea that it's absolutely at the center of what is most spiritual. Put them together in this country, you get this amazing amalgam of musics that keeps informing us, jazz, rock, hip-hop, all this stuff. And yet somehow, when you come to the classical part of it, if we're trying to find a contemporary classical expression, it needs to have something to do with the African aspect of our culture. But I believe that the African part was subjugated. There's a little suspicion when you start putting a beat behind classical music, I think because of this conflict about the way rhythm was considered in both of those cultures.
Yeah, Joe, I want to get your partners involved in the conversation in just a moment. But first, yep. I want you to tell one story which appeared in a newspaper article about your group, which I think is very funny. It's the story of how you tried to force your son to listen to Arnold Schoenberg.
Well, you know, I mean, I grew up in rock bands, then I went to classical music, and I was told, you need to leave this behind, and here's the great music, and there's all this music I didn't even know existed till I went to music school. Among one is Arnold Schoenberg, and he's just a symbol of all this other music that tended to say complex and dissonant is good, and lost the listening public. So I thought, maybe it's just because we don't listen to it enough, and my little kid, I'm going to put it in the house when he's 3, he's just learning to walk, play it all the time, and see, maybe he'll grow up being a big Arnold Schoenberg fan. Because Schoenberg used to say, 50 years after his death, kids would be running down the sidewalk whistling his tunes. So I thought, well, let me see if I could be part of this experiment. But what would happen is that the whole house would erupt into anger, and everyone we'd end up with, the kid would be in the kitchen screaming at my wife, and she'd be screaming at me. We let the experiment go after a couple of weeks because it just was wreaking havoc in the house. It's kind of an empirical experiment about this classical music that was a very honest attempt made with great integrity in the early part of the century to move the whole dialogue of the legacy forward, and I think made a whole bunch of assumptions which haven't played out.
Todd, let me go to you. What you're doing here is very interesting because you're playing saxophone, which is an instrument we associate with jazz music, and you're using it for a different style of music. Do you want to talk about that?
You know, when I came to playing music, I started with most 12-year-olds, and that was in band, concert band. So my literature was wind literature. And it wasn't until after hearing Spiral Gyra, the Rippingtons, the Yellow Jackets, Dave Koz, Dave Sanborn, that somebody gave me an album by John Coltrane with the Red Garland Trio, and I realized, oh, this is jazz. But at the time, I was also a sponsored amateur skateboarder, and there's a link there. And why I bring this up is that when you're a skateboarder, you're in competitions, and so what you're doing is you're mastering tricks, and then you're mastering runs. And I made a lot of associations with playing very difficult phrases in music, and then playing down the entire piece was like, having an entire run on the skateboard. And I just decided to go that route of classical music because everything was laid out for you. You know, you're reading it down. I didn't have to improvise so much. I didn't have to think on the spot. I certainly love jazz, and I certainly spent a great deal of time studying jazz, but I just really enjoyed the complexity of it and the reward, that feeling of nailing the same, let's call it musical trick, repeated times over and over and over again, instead of somebody saying, oh, you had a great solo a couple years ago on that one chorus. I like it better that they say, oh, I love it when you play that piece, that lick. It's so hard. It's so hard to master it, but you nailed it. And, you start making this bank of tricks, in a way, musical tricks. And I really just, that just basically took over my life. So I'm pretty compulsive about it like that.
And Felix, have you learned a lot of the violin sonatas that you're supposed to be able to play when you play the violin, aside from going into this music?
Well, that's how I started, of course. Coming from Europe, you start with not necessarily Bach, Beethoven, Brahms, but this is, of course, the majority of the pieces you would learn over there. And then I moved here in 99 and got exposed to just different styles of music. I mean, I always listened to pop and maybe the Beatles when I was young, but then hip-hop, well, that was not necessarily my type of music until I met those folks over here. And
we've been corrupting you ever since.
Exactly.
It's
yeah.
kind of like a hip-hop virgin, Felix.
But I'm getting into it, and yes. I think it's a valid style of music as well, and very important these days, and we have to be progressive. And actually working with my friends and colleagues here really broadened my horizon. And I still love Beethoven, Brahms, Bartok, and the big B's, let's say. The big B's.
I mean, Felix goes on tour all over the place. He's going on a tour to South America in a couple months where he's going to be performing concertos with some of the bigger orchestras down there. So he's, very much involved with all of that. All of us are still, actually.
By the way, I should mention that all of my guests, Joe Waters, Felix Oshofka, and Todd Raywald teach at San Diego State University. Joe, getting back to talking about rhythm and improvisation, are we searching for, since Schoenberg didn't work?
Yeah.
All right. Schoenberg didn't work. Are we still searching for a way to extend this tradition of classical music in a way that is more meaningful to people today? Is that what we're searching for?
Well, it's my personal search anyway. I certainly wouldn't speak for everybody, and there are many composers, I must say, who are still hoping to continue the legacy that Schoenberg started and waiting for the public to wake up. And, who knows what the future will bring. But for me, it's been very natural to try to connect the music that brought me into the world of creativity, which was the vernacular music that our culture produces. I don't come from a sophisticated background. Most of us don't. I came from playing rock and roll. And to find a way of connecting that with this wonderful legacy that I discovered, and I love Bach. I fell in love with Bach when I heard Switched on Bach, which was this synthesized version that came out in the 60s. It blew me away. I started to hear counterpoint, and I wanted to write fugues, and I taught myself how to do that. And the first thing I did was transcribe the Third Brandenburg Concerto for my rock band and teach it all to them by rote, which was quite an interest. I wish I had a recording of that. I wonder what it sounded like.
Now, you didn't force them to listen to Schoenberg, did you?
No, I didn't. But I would play Bach for my friends, or Handel when I discovered this and go, isn't this amazing? And they go, yeah, it's kind of okay. And I'd go, but it's amazing. Listen to what's happening with all the different melodies and the constructions and the way the musical thought gets extended. And they didn't quite get it the same way I did. But the doors opened for me, and I still love that world. And it's very important for me to find some way to connect what I think is a very important part of our culture that sits in the background and find a way of bringing it back and connecting with the present, the way the culture is evolving. And that means connecting somehow with the African part of who we are, I believe.
One thing I don't think I mentioned is Swarmius, the group that is performing for us now and will perform another piece in just a minute, is going to be performing this Saturday night at 8 p.m. at the Neurosciences Institute. And if you want to get a ticket to their performance, go to their website, which is Swarmius, that's SWARMIUS.com. And Joe, you're going to play one more song for us, one more tune. This is Lucas, mm-hmm. Bringer of Light.
Exactly.
Anything you want to say about it before you play it, or do you just want to play it?
How much time do we have?
A little bit.
Okay. Well, this was about my grandson, 7 months old, when he was visiting me, and I started recording him as any electronic guy would do, and then I found all this pre-verbal beautiful stuff. It wasn't just crying. It was all this communicative stuff. And it ended up influencing the whole piece. So it's an 18-minute piece. We're just playing a 3-minute section. It goes through all these different things. But behind them all is this 7-month-old kid trying to communicate. The section is called Baby Voodoo. Or what do you call it, Todd? You have a different name for it.
Call it the Bat Cave.
The Bat Cave. Okay.
All right. The Bat Cave. And the group is Swarmius. And that's just a little bit of the piece Lucas, Bringer of Light, performed there. We heard a CD of the group Swarmius, and Swarmius performs this Saturday night at 8 p.m. at the Neurosciences Institute. For tickets, you can go to their website, swarmius.com. And Swarmius is Joe Waters on the laptop computer. Joe, thank you for coming in.
Thanks so much.
Felix Olshovka, who plays violin. Thank you, Felix.
Thanks for having us.
And last but not least, Todd Raywalt, who plays saxophone. Thanks, Todd.
Hey, thanks again.
I'm Tom Fudge, and you've been listening to These Days on KPBS.